to this episode of the Daily Actor Interview Podcast. I'm Lance Carter. Today I'm talking with Douglas Sills. Douglas is currently starring as Gomez Adams in the touring production of The Sound of Music. No, I'm kidding. That would just be silly. He's starring in The Addams Family. I saw the show on Broadway when it had Nathan Lane and Bebe Neuwirth, and it was okay, you know? I don't know. Just fine. But talking with Douglas, he told me that the producers recognized this and decided to change the show a bit. Like 50% of it. They added new songs, and there's new plot elements that, as he says, give Gomez and Morticia a much stronger storyline. Which to me sounds great, because when I saw it, they were just kind of pushed in the background. I've read some reviews of this version of the show, and I've heard it's far superior than the Broadway version, and that Douglas himself is fantastic in the part. I'm actually going to go see the show tonight, and I'll update the site after I see it. Douglas was nominated for a Tony for his performance as the Scarlet Pimpernel, and since then has performed in the touring production of that show. He's done tons of regional theater work and guest star roles on shows like CSI and The Closer. I talked to Douglas about The Addams Family 2.0, life on the road, and what it's like to be nominated for a Tony. I really do appreciate it when you support the advertisers. Every little click does help. And don't forget that we also have a bunch of actor services available. Casting director and agent mailing labels, websites, and a bunch of other cool stuff. You can check all of that out on the site, dailyactor.com. And now, here's Douglas.
When you're touring, how are your hotel rooms? Are they nice? Or, I mean, like what's the, I guess, accommodations like?
Well, it's not so much about the accommodations for me. It's about the concubines.
you know how to negotiate a contract, I'm sensing.
I do, actually. It's my agent. Hotels are so important, and the one here is maybe the most luxurious we've had. So it's fantastic for us. And it's really nice when the accommodations are luxurious and plush. Or posh, I should say. It makes a big difference on the stay. Yeah, so it's sure. Really great.
So let's talk about the show. I've read where it's a lot different from the Broadway version that's on right now.
It is a lot different. You know, this show had its first incarnation in Chicago, pre-Broadway. And after that run, the producers decided to change directions, and they hired a new director. At that time, the Broadway dates were already in place, so the new director only had a limited amount of time to make changes. And, you know, in this day and age, the changes can be very far-reaching. When you want to even change a scene, you have to bring in all the lighting people. They have to change the lights with the computers. It has a lot of ramifications. So there were only so many changes they could make. After watching it on Broadway for a year or two, they dreamt about what they would do if they got another crack at it. And that's what the tour became. It became an opportunity where all the creators came together, including the newer director, who is not new to directing by any means. And they had, over that time, formed a real bond of trust and understanding with each other. And if they got another crack at it, what would they do? And the reception is no secret that the critical reception was mixed. And I think they felt they knew what to do. And when given the opportunity to do the tour, they really went back and redid it from the ground up. So I would say that the show is a good 50% different. There is a major plot line change, and that lends itself to different songs and different scenes. So there's quite a bit different, and what the nature of the changes, in the most general language, is to refocus the show on Gomez and Morticia. So there's a new plot point that gives Gomez and Morticia a much stronger storyline, and they become the sun around which the rest of the play revolves.
I saw the production on Broadway, and mm-hmm. I'm going to see it this week, and I'm completely curious and anxious to see it. I've read a couple reviews, and they all kind of say that how much better it is.
Yeah, I think, you know, like a lot of artists, they're not done with it until somebody says, I'm taking the painting away from you. You have to finish. So they were eager to have more time with it, and I think they really understood what was working with it and what wasn't working with it. That to be able to watch your play on Broadway with Nathan Lane and Bebe Neuwirth working it and learn from that is an incredible luxury. So I do think it is a stronger, even unbiased, and having not read any reviews in the past since we started, I can say that I think the storyline is stronger and more involving, and that's a direct result of getting to watch the Broadway version. So it's built on the backs of that show in New York, but I think it is superior, and I don't think there's much discussion about that. In fact, so much so that this is the edition that is going to be published in the future when you lease or rent the Addams Family. This is what you'll get: our songs, our keys, our script, our libretto. And in fact, this is the edition that just opened in Brazil and will shortly open in Australia, and then in the West End, and another production subsequently. And in fact, this is the production. Our production will be filmed for feature release next month in July.
Oh, sweet. How did you get the part?
I bought it. I make love with a very wealthy older woman, and she bought it for me.
Do you know that older woman?
Okay,
I'd like to have her name.
I think I got her name from you. You're just forgetting. You gave me her name. No, you know what? I have worked with this director. We did the Broadway revival of Little Shop together.
Nice.
When was that? I think that was 2002 or 2004. And I've worked with this producer, Stuart Oaken. Stuart and I did a wonderful project together when he was a high-level executive with Disney. And I had worked with the choreographer recently on his directorial debut. Sergio Trujillo is his name. So I knew them, and they knew my work, and they approached me. We had some discussions. I said, you know, I'm not really in the market to go on a tour anymore. That was in my younger days. And they enticed me by saying the kinds of things that interested me, that they were interested in rethinking the show, they were interested in rethinking the part, they wanted me because I was X, Y, and Z, and the compensation was appropriate. So they just sort of made me an offer I couldn't refuse.
When you get a part like this, where like everybody and their brother has an image in their head of the character, like where do you start? Like what's the sort of the first things you do, I guess, to bring your Gomez to life?
Yeah, my first impulse is to look at it the way I sort of look at life, and that goes from everything from religion to buying stock. Whichever way the crowd is going, figure you should probably be walking in the reverse direction. So the fact that everyone has expectations, my first job was to forget about that. And if you were good to go down that road and you were to make one or two people happy, you're going to make 10 other people unhappy. There's no good result from that route. So my job was to forget about the expectations and make a character that lived and breathed and seemed to be created in three dimensions. So I did not go back to watch the television show, and I'd never seen the movies. I looked at the cartoons at length. I read the script and treated the script as I would any play. What are the givens? What is this character about? What is important to him? What is he afraid of happening to him? What does he most dream of happening to him in his wildest imagination? And treated it like I would treat a Chekhov play or a Sam Shepard play. And then I, with the director, sort of changed the shades of the paint that I'm using to accommodate the aesthetic that they're drawing the play in. So rather than painting it in browns and rust color the way I might paint a Sam Shepard play, here we might use more poster paint colors. So that's generally because, you know, my graduate school training was much more in classical theater, and that sort of colored how I approach everything. And so I didn't really concern myself too much with people's expectations. I felt that if I loved the character rather than judged him, and if I portrayed him capturing the essence of his joie de vivre and what people were so attracted to, that there would be reward in that. In the same way, you might pick a good actor to play. Like, they just let them... What's his name? Oh, my God, I'm having a stroke. Who just played the Hulk?
Oh, Mark Ruffalo.
Right. So Mark is a very, very respected, grounded, sort of rich, three-dimensional actor. He's not the first person you'd think of to play the Hulk.
Yeah.
But they were smart. They sort of went and got an actor, and they'll punch it up with the special effects. But first and foremost, let's have an actor. Let's have somebody who's grounded and who's going to create a character. The same way they chose... oh my God, I'm having a stroke. Iron Man.
Oh,
Robert
Downey. Robert Downey, yeah.
Right? So you, and Sherlock Holmes, they picked him first. You know, they're choosing actors first, and then letting the plot, letting the aesthetics, letting the costume center, letting the special effects decorate it as much as they want. But this way, they get somebody who's grounded, who has a sense of humor, who's really masterful at what they do. They're not picking necessarily a pretty boy or a girl. They're picking somebody who's rich, you know, who brings with them a wealth of experience, creativity, and artistry to making a three-dimensional and interesting. It's not just enough that it's realistic three-dimensional, but it has to be interesting. Those are your two obligations, I think, as an artist, as a performer, is to be both honest and interesting, and one without the other is, well, I guess it's sort of like one hand clapping.
Yeah.
Sort of pointless. So that's sort of my approach, and I didn't worry too much about the expectations. I let the creators worry about the expectations. I let everything that's macabre and interesting about the Addams Family speak for itself. I didn't need to be spooky or weird, because the environment is already spooky and weird. And then I find that if you're trying to do that, it's sort of what I would call a hat on a hat. You're double gesturing. If the house is already spooky and dark, you don't need to be, you know, Count Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of approached it sort of the way I would approach any other character, and then just fine-tuned it with the director.
When you're on tour, I imagine it kind of takes more of a toll on your voice than, you know, staying at home and doing a show. Does it first, and how do you sort of combat that toll? You know, like, take any, you know, special precautions, drink tea, you know?
Right, right. It does take a toll, particularly in relation to the travel on the day off. So even the day of rest, you're traveling. The change in humidity is a big deal, and the change in the nature of the sound in each venue forces you or suggests that you should push harder sometimes when you can't hear yourself the same way you did the previous week. So there are, and there's new people in each city, new stage hands, new everybody. So there's fresh bacteria in every city. So, yes, it's very dangerous. And once you get sick or you have a problem with the cord, there's no time to rest. The only way to combat it is preventative. Once it's already taken hold, the best thing you can do is take off as quickly as you can so you're not doing more damage and extend the absence even longer. It is challenging. It depends on how challenging the role is in terms of what comes naturally to the middle of your voice. You know, in other words, are there really high notes? Are there really loud sections? Is the character who shouts quite a bit? And then you cope with it accordingly. That may mean no eating after the show so you don't get any acid reflux. It may mean warming up your body a little differently, whether it's yoga or you can't work out beforehand, maybe you can't lift weights. Maybe you have to make sure you're hydrated, so there's a lot of water involved. It may mean no talking after the show, only texting or emailing. It may mean no talking before noon. It may mean no interviews. It just sort of depends. You have to have a sense on what the demands of the role are and what your personal vulnerabilities are. And you have to say, where are your body? In other words, I feel something coming on. I scratched my cords. I can feel them. They're a little hoarse today. And being smart and not letting your emotions get in the way, like, oh, I'm proud, I'm going to do my 8 shows when you should probably take one off. Now, I've been really fortunate, knock wood. I've had an excellent attendance record on this job. I think we've had 250 shows. I've not missed one because the vocal shows for my back. I threw my back out, and I think I missed five or six shows for life obligation. You know, a friend's mother passed away, so I went to the memorial. But it sort of has to be primary. I don't have children, and I don't know how I would do it with children. That would be hard because they have to be primary, and they have very intense demands of your time and energy. So, you know, I have a couple of acquaintances, Greg Edelman and Charlie Carmelo, that have three kids, and they both have strong New York careers. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah.
I admire them tremendously. But you're absolutely right. It's an astute observation, and you have to be extremely vigilant, especially me, because I carry a lot of the show, and my part is very demanding. I'm on three-quarters of the time. And more difficult to replace. I'm also above the title. If I'm out, people are allowed to ask for their money back.
Oh, wow.
So I'm very careful about how I recreate and how I enjoy my time and whether I can talk on the phone or whether I can go to the gym or if it should be more of a yoga-style workout or if it, you know, lifting weights is okay. Or I'm just careful about it and what I'm eating after. And, you know, reflux is an issue. And how soon can you eat before the show?
So
when you're doing a show in general, eight shows a week, everything is revolving around your condition to do the show.
Yeah.
When you eat, what you eat, it's all part of it. So your question's very astute. And it is a difficult life. But the rewards are just, you know, indescribable.
So not a lot of ribs and pizza for you, huh?
You can on the day off. The recovery is a little difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
But you can. You can on the day off. But, everyone has their weakness, right? Some guys are like, we have a dancer who just loves his freaking Domino's pizza. He orders one almost every other night after the show. But, you know, he's 25, and he can get through it. You know, he's not singing solo in the show. So, you know, you just got to know what your vulnerabilities are in any given job.
Yeah, yeah. So how did you initially get your start?
You know, I just did it like any kid, I think, in grade school. And then at summer camp, I watched my brother and sisters do it. And I did it a little bit more. Then I did it a little bit in high school. I did it a little bit in college. I studied a little bit in college, both a little bit of voice, acting. Then I took a term off. I started getting paid. The first job was in between high school and college. And in the summers, I'd find a paid gig. I went to New York for a term off school. I took a term off to see how I fared, if I could compete. And I got a sense of who I was in relation to the business and then what interested me. And then I went back and finished undergrad and decided I wanted to go to graduate school for theater. And just, as I mentioned, for classical drama.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to the West Coast and went to a place called ACT in San Francisco called the American Conservatory Theater, so master's degree. And that was sort of my route. And so for me, training in school was an important place. It sort of gave me a tool belt where I can walk into any situation. If it's Pippin on Broadway or Gibson's The Master Builder in the regional theater or a movie or Will and Grace episode, I feel like I have a toolkit that I can reach into and it can help me accomplish virtually anything. That, in addition to continuing study and just watching the environment and see what people are buying and what's on television and what theaters are doing, it really was a good choice for me. I'm not sure it's a choice for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, some people just leave high school and go right into being dancers on Broadway. I mean, I think there's 1,000 ways to skin that cat, but that was sort of my rough beginning.
And I know you were nominated for a Tony for the Scarlet Opera.
Yes, that cost me a fortune. Yes.
What's that, when you're nominated to the time of the show, what's that, I guess, month like for you? Can you get the best tables in New York? I mean, are you just like the man of town, you know? Are you just like, does everyone just like say, hey, what do you need? You know what I mean?
It is fun. It's a lot of fun. But the truth is unlike being in a movie that gets nominated, you're still doing your work 8 times a week. And you better be doing your best work because all the voters are going to start coming. So if anything, you're exhausted from doing such a great job that you got nominated. But then you've got to double your efforts. to make sure every show is fantastic, because that's when all the voters start coming. That's when you start doing press for the show because of the Tony nomination. It's actually, all the work becomes 10 times harder. And
you think about that,
You know, it just gets much more pronounced and even more difficult. That's my memory. Exhaustion is actually my memory, because you're vocally exhausted and you still have to do these appearances for press. And you might have to get up at 4 in the morning to do the CBS morning show. You know, and you can't turn that down. You're talking about millions of viewers. So, and then you've got to go do your show at night, and you've got to be fantastic. And then, you know, if you've got a family life, it's very, very, very demanding. And I think that's why you see when some people, young people, get a lot of acclaim for something, they may fall apart. That's where drugs come into the picture, and they just get wasted, and they can't take the pressure, and it's a lot.
Yeah.
It can be a great deal for one person. Yeah.
And my final question is, what's your advice to actors?
You know, I do this a lot for people. I would probably ask a bunch of questions about what their experience is, you know, how far along in their life and career they are, and what their desires are. And then I would tailor my answer to that in general, to what they want. But I would say my advice to actors is, first and foremost, the thing to cultivate is your own desire. And if you have a fierce, muscular desire, the rest will fall into place one way or another for you. Next, I would say, there's no one way to skin the cat. It's not a route. It's not a street towards some destination. It, the image that I would give them is much more of an open field, and somewhere on the other side of the open field is paying work and a successful, reputable career. And you can get across that field in a thousand million ways. And so just because your friends are all going to a musical theater program at a college certainly doesn't mean that that's the only way to get there. And if you want to go in the Peace Corps for 2 years and then come back to it, or you want to go sell real estate, or you have a baby and you have to earn some money for the, you know, by selling mortgages for the first year or two or 5 years or whatever, you need to take a break in the middle. There's nothing that says that's not okay. In fact, I would say the opposite. What I see a lot is actors who lack interesting life experience. They've spent so much time studying theater, movies, other actors, in class with other actors, that they don't have a lot of life experience to draw on that makes their work authentic and unique.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real liability. It's you're much more liable to bring something interesting to the table if you have a real life that you're really involved with. And if that means, as I said, taking care of your elderly parents as they pass, or, you know, donating time at the Humane Society, whatever it is, something authentic that speaks about you and gives you a take on life other than doing impressions of other performers doing roles. So rather than thinking of, you know, the movie of Oklahoma, because you've studied it and you've seen 6 versions of it, you know, you're much better off having been somebody who worked as a dock worker and understand what real labor is from morning till night. That really doesn't have anything to do with show business itself.
Mm-hmm.
And those would be some of the most important things that I would tell an actor, depending, of course, on what their interests were and what their goals.
Thank you so much, Douglas. I really do appreciate you taking the time out to talk to me. And thank you guys for listening. Keep coming back to Daily Actor for more great interviews, news from film, TV, and theater, and so much more. Thank you once again so much for supporting the advertisers. I'm Lance, and I will talk to you soon.